Salutations! Welcome back to another edition of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I am your host, Elle Ariel, and we can be found on all the streaming platforms. We can be found on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and so much more. And we're also at musicjobspodcast.com. That's musicjobs with an S, podcast.com. And if you are on one of the streaming platforms and you feel like giving us some pretty little stars or leaving a comment or giving some feedback, we would love it because we would love to get pushed up in the rankings and start to get a little bit more traffic. I think this is a great resource for musicians and artists, anyone looking to get into the music industry. So spread the word if you can. Like, subscribe, share, tell your friends. Last week I had the immense pleasure of interviewing Alejandro Cohen. He is the executive director of DubLab, as well as a musician and a composer. DubLab is a pioneer in the online experimental radio space and also ground zero for underground radio music, arts, culture, everything Los Angeles. Really an icon in Los Angeles. It has been around since 1999. It is now expanded worldwide. They're in Spain and Germany and Japan. And they've just expanded to your FM dial at 99.1 if you are in the Los Angeles area. So urge you to check them out and also check them out at dublab.com. So this week, I am totally thrilled to introduce y'all to Graham Cochran. If you don't know him already, he is a singer, songwriter, musician, and he's the founder, CEO of RecordingRevolution.com. I urge you to check out his YouTube channel, his website, RecordingRevolution.com. It is chock full of all these incredible free tutorials all about recording and mixing. He basically started this business really from scratch, a little tiny blog. He was just trying to support his family during the recession of 2008-2009, just struggling along and putting out these videos and these tutorials, just trying to help people out on how to record and how to mix. You don't have to buy all this expensive gear. You don't have to buy all this third-party plugin, you know, just very simple and approachable way to do mixing and recording. Just phenomenal, and it's just such an incredible resource, and I'm really happy for his success, and I'm super happy to share his story with you. I think everybody's going to be really empowered and inspired. And I also obviously want to introduce a song. You know, I always do that. So here's a song that he co-wrote with Grammy-nominated producer Ill Factor. It's called Raise My Flag. Here we go. My kingdom come. For joining me on Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I'm totally excited that you could be here today.
Well, I'm honored to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about your childhood. Can you tell me about kind of your first impressions of music and, you know, what was going on in your household when you were growing up in terms of music?
Yeah, I was really blessed to have a musical family. My dad grew up as a trumpet player and became a singer and was classically trained. So he sang opera and choral music, and then he also sang jazz, and then he would just play records all the time. We would listen to, you know, everything from Handel's Messiah to Led Zeppelin to The Doors to Alice in Chains to whatever, you know, he liked all things and everything. And so he really got me into music. It just was like a natural part of our family. And so I started singing as a kid, realized I could carry a tune pretty easily. So I sang a lot, and I started to play trumpet like my dad to learn music, learn how to read music, but mostly gravitated to guitar eventually because I wanted to write my own songs and sing in a band. And it's hard to sing and play trumpet at the same time.
Yeah. That's so cool. And what about your mom?
Not musically inclined at all.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But was she supportive of you pursuing music or?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they were really supportive. And I did a lot of like musical theater too. Like that was a route that at one point I was like, man, this is what I want to do because I loved acting. I loved performing. And so I did a lot of musical theater in high school. And so they were both super supportive of all the time it took to just, you know, audition for parts for that and then rehearsals. And it's like a sport because I also did sports too, but I kind of would pick one per season or one thing at a time. But it was a lot of, you know, evenings and practice. And then I played in the pet band and the high school band and then did my own music. And so they could tell that's what I loved. So as long as I was doing well in my grades and doing well in the academic side of things, they were super supportive of me trying all the arts and the musical side of things.
That's great. Now, did you kind of start to get an idea forming in your head about what path you wanted to take in terms of music when you were in high school?
Yeah, I definitively remember one summer I was writing songs with a couple other guys, and we wrote like a whole album in like 2 days, and we recorded it with some really cheap equipment, and it was just such an effortless, exciting, creative moment, right? When you're sitting down with someone in the creative space and you're feeding off each other. And I said, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. I want to play music. I want to write it. I want to sing it and perform it. So in my mind, as a 16, 17 year old, I had the career path of, I just want to be a rock star. That's all I want to do. Mm-hmm. So that was what made sense to me versus with my skill set and my interests. I didn't really know. You know, every kid thinks that they're going to be the rock star. So I thought, surely I can do this. So that's what I put my energy towards.
Now, were you thinking music college or just getting yourself out there? Or what was the next step?
I was not thinking college. Because I thought, you know, I don't need to go to college to be a rock star. You just need to play music.
Mm-hmm.
My parents and my grandparents had, they had saved money for me to go to college for years. And they had worked really hard to set aside something, enough for me to go to state school and not have to borrow any money. And they said, you know what, we want you to go to college. This is important. And that's why we saved up for it. So we're all for you doing music if that's what you want to do, but we want you to get a degree also. So the compromise was audio school because in my mind, I had already started fiddling around with recording music in high school just because we wanted to record our own band. And I discovered I really loved that art form as well. That was just as exciting and creative to record music as it was to write it and perform it. It was like a new way to enjoy music for me. So I thought, I wonder if I can go to school for recording music. And sure enough, there was a really good music industry program at a school in Virginia where I was living at the time. And that was sort of the compromise. Okay, I can go to a 4-year college, I'll get a degree, but I'll be able to play in recording studios all day. So that was the path I took.
Okay, it's interesting though, because, you know, sort of the rock star vision isn't being in a studio, it's being on stage in front of, you know, millions of people. So it is interesting that you went in that direction, don't you think?
I guess so. I mean, you know, there's the musicians that don't care about the technical studio stuff, but they have to do it. It's a normal part. It's just as much a part of their process as touring is. It's just not the visible process. You know, they spend weeks and months in the studio and working with songwriters and working with producers, and it's hard work to make a great sounding record, and they do it, but some of them just want to do it to get it to sound good and then go out and share it live. But you're right, I gravitated towards loving that part of the process. So I knew if I was going to do music for a living as an artist, if I was lucky enough to do that, I would enjoy the studio process as much, if not more, than the touring process. So yeah, maybe I was on one side of the spectrum a little more.
Yeah, again, I think people I've interviewed and talked to, it's, you know, the sort of producer side is like, well, I'm an introvert and I like kind of being in the dark for hours. You know what I mean? So I do think it's interesting you have sort of both sides of it to your personality. So maybe just walk us through sort of post-college and what direction you were thinking of going in now that you had all this under your belt.
Yeah, I mean, the plan was while I was in college to try to really make a record or two that I could shop around to labels. And I had a songwriting professor who really took me under his wing, and he used to tour with Elton John and Sammy Hagar as their keyboard player. And he was signed to a few record labels and played in a bunch of bands and did the whole rock star thing and now had settled down as a professor in audio school. And he really mentored me and helped squeeze a lot out of me and challenged me. And he kind of came alongside me and said, let's do this together. So we hired session musicians from Nashville, and I wrote an EP, and we produced a record going into my senior year. And the goal was to start shopping that around all senior year, so in hopes that I would, as I wrapped up school, I would have something signed, have a deal, have some direction after college to go. So I worked hard on that, but nothing really stuck. We didn't, we got a few people like, yeah, this is cool, or yeah, I kind of like it. No one really jumped on it. And I kind of, that was the card I had to play at the time. And since I wasn't looking like it was working out, and at the same time I was engaged to my then girlfriend who became fiance, and I wanted to get married, and I was starting to see like two paths in front of me. Like, do I really pursue this in another way now? Do I try plan B to be a musician, or like move to LA or move to Nashville and then try to scrape by for a while and see what connections I can make? Or do I get married? And my fiance at the time was still finishing school. She had another semester. So I didn't really want to leave her. So I kind of had like this decision to make of, do I give up on the dream, or do I go for the dream, and what do I want more? So it was a challenging season for sure.
Yeah. And you're certainly not alone in that. So what did you decide to do?
I decided to go for the girl. So
aww.
It was the right decision, 100%. So I ended up, staying in my college town where she was finishing up school, and I took a job selling advertising at the local radio station. And I hated it, and I was bad at it. But it allowed me to make a living, stick around for her to finish up school, and to kind of figure out what we were going to do next. And in that season, we ended up really falling in love with a church that we were a part of there that we just started going to, and I started playing in the band there. And I was like, if we're going to be around here for a while, I might as well use my talents to play and write music and record records with this church worship band. So I did a lot with that band there, and I ended up just opening up a sort of freelance business on the side where I would just record a lot of the local bands in that scene and a lot of the singer-songwriters, and ended up just doing freelance recording and mixing as well as my own music for probably 3 or 4 years in staying in that town.
And did you enjoy that process? Did you find you were actually, this was something that was sort of working your creative muscle and giving you
Absolutely.
Joy?
Yeah. It was like, it opened my mind a little bit to like, look, what do I want to do? I want to do music, right? That's what I love. And we all want to be, maybe we don't all want to be famous. It was a lot of selfish desires. I want to be known. I want to be famous. I want to play cool places and make music videos. But underneath that were other loves too. I want to be involved in making records. I want to help other people's music sound good. I want to make my own music, new stuff every year. I want to play music live. And I was able to do all three of those things while being married and I had a day job. And it really was kind of a sweet spot of being able to do all the things that I really do enjoy while having somewhat of a normal life.
But then what happened next?
So that was a season that was fun. And then we entered another season where my buddy, who was one of the pastors at the church I was a part of, he wanted to go start another church, but move out of state and move somewhere warmer and somewhere different. And he was looking at Florida, and he said, hey, do you want to come, you and Shay, my wife, do you want to come with us? And you could sort of lead the band down there and sort of just have an adventure. And pick up and move. And we were ready, I think, for a change of pace. I've been in that same small, sleepy town for 7 years now, 4 while in college and 3 while out of college. And we said, we would love to do that. So we left our jobs, left our community, and went with a group of other people down to where we live now in Tampa, got a new job down here. We bought our first house. We had our first baby girl. And this was around 2009. So this was the middle of the recession. 5 months into being down here, the company I started working for, which is in the financial sector, they just ran out of money. They were a brand new startup, and I was like employee number one. And then we hired like another guy, and we just weren't making enough money. And the company is like, look, we're going to have to shut down and let you go. Sorry.
Wow.
And so I found myself 1,000 miles away from home, with a mortgage, with a baby, no job, no connections, musically speaking, really. Mm-hmm. And I was 26 years old and, you know, four years out of school, and just kind of felt like, what am I doing with my life? What am I supposed to do? That was a very challenging, frustrating season then.
And can you just tell our viewers, because it is such a great turnaround, tell us what happened next, like what direction you decided to go in?
Yeah, well, this was a huge, 2009, 2010, that was like a huge turning point in my life that I didn't know at the time.
Mm-hmm.
We, at that point, after we burned through savings, I tried to just ramp up freelance mixing as much as I could. I called up every band I knew, every artist I'd worked with, and asked, hey, do you need any work done? I was doing editing work, like tuning vocals and editing drums for other mix engineers who didn't want to do that. So they would subcontract me out for that stuff, which is a great way to actually get clients that weren't my clients, by the way. But I did anything and everything. And my wife is a photographer. And at the time, she was a wedding photographer. So she was taking weddings on the weekends. And I would watch her baby on the weekends. And then I would try to mix bands. But there wasn't enough money coming in. We were on food stamps for 18 months.
Wow.
It was a really like embarrassing low point for me with my pride, because I felt like here I was, a college graduate, I've held jobs before, I moved my family away from everyone, and now, you know, we're on food stamps. Like, what am I doing with my life? I should just go to Home Depot and get a job. But in that season, I started this little blog where I was going to like sort of just highlight some of the stuff I was doing in the studio. So if I was mixing a band, I would sort of highlight some of their music and talk about, hey, here's something cool we were doing on this track with this band, and hoped that the blogs would go out in the world and like get me more clients. You know, if I needed to get more clients, I might as well get online. I thought I'd promote myself online. And that's all I wanted to do, was get more mixing work, because I didn't want to be a blogger or a content creator. It's just a means to an end. But
right.
What ended up happening was that people started to find these blog posts, and I don't know how. And I started to do some videos, and they started to find the videos on YouTube, and they really liked them. And they would say, like, hey, this is really great. The way you explained that was really helpful. Can you do a video on this or that? Or how do you do this? Or that makes me think about this. And so they started giving me more topic ideas and asking good questions. And so I kind of committed to, if in between mixing gigs, if I had nothing to do for a day or a week, I would just make more videos, or I would just write more articles, or get on Twitter and share more of that stuff and try to help people out. And that was the beginning of the recording revolution, which is a huge, huge part of what I do now. It just sort of organically caught on with people, and I knew there was something there. I just didn't know what it was or how to turn it into a business.
Well, it's really interesting too, though, because, you know, this was like desperate times, but the fact is, though, you didn't go out to Home Depot. You didn't say, oh my God, I just have to, like, you know, I can't be doing this like foolish, you know, music stuff or whatever. I just need to be sensible and get a job at like Home Depot or, you know, whatever it takes, or a 9-to-5 or something like that. But the fact is you didn't, and you actually went on this entrepreneurial path, which, you know, was a lot more risk. How did you kind of overcome the self-doubt or the fear of that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. To be honest, I had tons of doubt. So I don't want anyone to think that I had this great plan and I was super excited about it. I actually, every day was like, I don't want to do this. This is dumb. Because I didn't see how it was possible. I'm not entrepreneurial by nature. I was very much sort of a, let me have a steady paycheck. I'm really afraid of like the ups and downs of freelance work and commission-based sales. I just didn't like any of that. I just wanted to provide for my family. A lot of insecurity, especially around the holidays, right? When you meet up with friends and family and they say, so you're in Florida now. What are you doing now? Well, I lost my job. Oh, bummer. You know, are you applying for new jobs? No, I started this blog about audio recording. And I would get these blank stares and like, well, cool. How do you make money off of that? And I would just say, I don't know yet. I'm working on that. I felt so embarrassed and so ashamed. So I was super insecure. So for sure, that was for a long time, a solid 2 years, I think, always there lurking in the back. Like, am I really wasting my time today? Was this a good use of my time? Am I a responsible husband and father? But what's interesting, though, is that I had two things going. I had one, I really honestly believe that it was God that called me to start this thing. I feel like the idea came from him. I felt like I was really hesitant to do it, and I felt like he kept leading me to keep doing it. So I felt like it was faith in what he wanted to do that was sort of guiding me in it. And my insecurity was just kicking and screaming the whole way. Mm-hmm. And then on the tangible side of things, of what I could see that there was a little tribe of people, you know, that liked the recording revolution, you know, 8 years ago, and were like interested in it, and read everything I did and watched everything I did and asked good questions, and they were engaged, and they were saying, "This is really helpful. Please make more." And it, that was, albeit small, it was real. And I saw momentum, and it was hard to explain them, but I would explain to my wife, I said, "Babe, I think there's something here that's worth pursuing more, but it's scary to pursue more because I need to make a living at some point. Mm-hmm. But I know people really like this. And if I didn't hear any of that, if it was just crickets, if nobody was reading it, I probably would have quit for sure because I wouldn't mm-hmm. have seen anything in front of me that said there's something here, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So things start to pick up. You're starting to get this tribe, and you know, you're being of service by doing this. And so that you're getting more engagement and more people are coming to read your stuff and watch your videos. And where did you go from there?
Yeah. From there, I remember wanting to teach people how to use Pro Tools, you know, a specific piece of software. And I thought, man, there's so many Pro Tools tutorials out there that are really boring and they make it really complicated. You know, it's not that hard to use. And I've taught it to my friends for years. And I was like, you know, what would be better is if I made a tutorial series where I'm teaching you Pro Tools, but it's like you and me sitting down for coffee in front of the computer. And I'm like, all right, here's how we do this. This is what this window is showing you. Here's how you do this. And then walk you through Pro Tools in an afternoon, like 3 or 4 hours, real casual, real, we'll build a song together. That way you could walk away from that like afternoon and say, man, that makes so much sense. Pro Tools is not daunting to me anymore. Now I can get past the software and just get into the music making. And that's what I wanted to make. And at the time, YouTube would only let me make videos that were 15 minutes long. I was like, dude, I'm going to have to break this up into like tons of 15-minute videos. This is going to be a super long series. And at the time, YouTube wouldn't let you upload HD video. Like, this shows how old this was. It was like not quite, you know, you could only blow it up, but so big. And so I was like, you know what I should just do? It's just screen grab this and film this and not do it on YouTube, but just sell it. You know, like make it like a full 3-4 hour thing and bundle it up in a zip file and see if somebody wants to, you know, pay for it. And if they buy it, then they can get all the videos much higher quality than YouTube will give me. And then it can help them out. And it was kind of like an experiment to see if someone would buy a tutorial for me instead of a 10-minute thing, like a nice 3-4 hour in-depth thing. So that was my first foray into monetizing. And what I did was just put up a little simple sales page. I put a PayPal button. I think it was like $45 at the time. And I emailed out on my email list. I had a few hundred people on my MailChimp email list and said, hey, guys, if you're ever confused about Pro Tools, here's an entire course called Rethink Pro Tools, and it'll walk you through how to use it. Check it out. And I remember getting my very first sale. I was not even at home. I was visiting family in Seattle, and I remember getting on some Wi-Fi at a coffee shop and checking email. And there was this PayPal, you have payment, email, and somebody had spent $45. So that went in my bank account, and then they got the download link. And that was like the moment where I was like, wait a second, this is how I can make money on this. I can make courses that are like super in-depth, and it'll be an extension of the YouTube videos. It'll be like I can do way more in these paid courses, and I can charge for them. And if people want to buy them, I can get paid, they can get the download, and maybe this can be something.
That's so fantastic. And the fact, too, that you knew what you were offering was really valuable and that it could be a way to support your family, you know, and that in itself, too, is a risk because you think, oh, you know, there's all these free tutorials. People aren't going to want to buy what I have to offer. But obviously, you know, the opposite was true.
And the opposite is definitely more true. And it's funny because the more free videos I give away and the more I teach for free, the more customers I get.
That's so great. So first sale, and then did you start kind of crafting, you know, a business strategy, a business plan, or how did you move forward?
Yeah, I was operating kind of in the dark. I had no idea how you're supposed to do things. There's so many cool resources out today, and so many more people doing sort of online business and education-based businesses today than there were then. And even if there were some back then, this was 2010 when I was really starting to make products, I didn't have any clue who they were or how to do it. So I was kind of making this up as I went. So I just did what made sense to me and what would make sense for my following, like what would be natural for them and what would they want. So the Pro Tools course was like the only thing I ever thought I could sell. Like, I don't know what else I could sell. Honestly, that's it. But I knew that wasn't enough. It wasn't enough products. It wasn't a high price point. And I was like, I got to make more products. And so I started to think through what do people really want more of, though? You know, what do they like that's free? And what have they told me they want more of? And one thing that was huge is, and still is people want to know how to produce vocals. They're like, my vocal tracks don't sound great. How do you mix vocals? What are you doing to make your vocals sound really, really good? So I was like, I could make a vocals course. So I made one on how to produce vocals. And then people say that drums is really hard. That how do you record drums? How do you mix drums? And so I went to my buddy's studio, who's a drummer, and I filmed how to mic up a drum kit a bunch of different ways and how to mix those tracks. And I made a drum product. And I just sort of did the natural things that people were asking for and looking at what videos on YouTube were doing really well and where could I go more in depth? How could I really make it a better learning experience? And I just slowly but surely added more courses and then simultaneously try to just grow my audience through more free content, grow my email list every single day. And then that would have more people seeing my email funnel, which pitches my courses. And just it's a simple combination of more people, more products, more sales. And it's slow. It was slow, though. I mean, the first the 18 months we were on food stamps, I was starting to make some money. But it'd be like $500 a month or maybe $1,000 a month. And that's like not enough to sustain a family. So it was like, how is this going to ramp up quicker and bigger? But the formula has been the same ever since day one. It took some time, I think, for that inflection point where there was a lot of people starting to hear about me.
So I've obviously watched a number of your videos, especially the vocals ones. And you know what strikes me, like I'm a Logic Pro girl. And what strikes me is that it's so translatable. Like you really do keep it so nice and simple and, easily approachable that it was like I had no problem, whatever you were saying, applying it to Logic Pro and that type of thing. Was that something that just comes naturally to you, or was it something that you saw there was a need for and you've just really tried to tailor your product in that direction?
I think it's both. I mean, I've always been a Pro Tools user, but I know, and I knew from day one that people were using all kinds of programs other than Pro Tools. Even when I was in college, people were using Digital Performer or Logic Pro. And nowadays, there's so many more DAWs. So to me, it was like, it makes no sense to teach only Pro Tools specific ways of doing things. I'm going to alienate so many people because it's not about which piece of software you use. It's about the tools that the software gives you, like EQ or compression or volume or delay or whatever it is. So in my mind, I was like, all right, I'm going to always assume that people have different pieces of software so I can give them something that's going to help not only more people, but even help them if they change platforms. Let's say they change from Pro Tools to Logic. Mm-hmm. I want them to be able to still learn how to mix or record or master or use this plugin or whatever, no matter what platform they use. And so I try to use a language that's more universal. Plus, software changes, platforms change. I mean, people even use my videos to go mix live sound, and they apply it to a live mixing board because it's the same concept. Mm-hmm. So to me, that made sense naturally, and I was trying to be strategic to help the most people that would find a video, because I would hate to find a video and go, oh, he's talking about it in Pro Tools. I don't use Pro Tools, so I can't learn from this. So I guess, I don't know if that answers your question. I was trying to just be...
No, it does. Absolutely. Because that was one of the frustrations sometimes I would have with when I had issues with Logic Pro. It's like, okay, what do I do? Do I try to call Apple? I get through their, right. You know, somehow like their telephone help desk maze. Do I go on a Logic Pro forum and pray that somebody's are asked this question, and that the answer is something that is easily digestible and that I can use. Like, it was just sort of feeling at a loss, and especially, I'm sure a lot of other musician producers feel the same way. You know, you're kind of isolated. And, you know, yes, you know, thank God for Google, but it's also like there's too much information and a lot of it's technical and a lot of it's not easy to apply or translate or that type of thing. And, you know, I felt your videos were a wonderful solution to that, you know, that again, it was like, oh, I don't need to look specifically for Logic Pro. If I'm having issues recording vocals or mixing vocals in Logic Pro, I can actually look at mixing vocals. And I think actually that's how I first stumbled upon Recording Revolution.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that's encouraging, because I think one of the reasons there's so many bad tutorials out there is that they are too technical. And I think what we're doing really actually isn't a technical endeavor. It's an artistic one.
Mm-hmm.
We're just trying to create art. And we have to use technical tools, but that's like telling a painter, like, to obsess over the technicality of the paintbrush, the weight of it, the brush length and thickness. And the painter doesn't care. They just care about what the tool can do. Like, use that brush, what does it look like on the canvas? And so I think people who are really smart, who really understand audio, teach it, and they're confused as to why people don't get it. And it's because they're teaching it in a technical way. And I've never been a technical person. I learned more from hearing it and making music feel good and sound good. So I just want to know, what does this do when I push this button? And how do I get this sound? Oh, I use these tools in this way. So I always teach in the way I want to learn and the way a lot of my friends learn. Because my friends, before Recording Revolution, because I make every video as if I'm making it for my friends. My friends are talented musicians, and they want a home studio just like the rest of us. But they don't really want to go to audio school or become engineers. They just want to make killer sounding recordings of their cool songs they're writing. And so I always teach in a way that they would understand, because they don't care about sample rates or bit depths or, you know, wavelength. They just care about, what does this EQ do for me? You know, and how do I use it to make the vocals do this? And so that makes sense to me to teach in that way.
That's great. The other thing is, obviously, and I'd like you to talk a little bit more about it, is your marketing strategy, because same thing, I signed up for the emails, and like most people, I have so much going on and a lot of like ADD. But again, I'll see an email from you with a subject heading and it's like, oh my God, how did he know? How did he know I was struggling with this very thing, you know, about like doubling vocals or whatever? So what do? I open the email. I, you know, read your email. I open the video. I'm like, oh my God, this is great. So can you talk a little bit more about how you kind of started to formulate your marketing strategy? Again, were you taking marketing courses? Like, how did you kind of figure out all this marketing?
Yeah, that's been a fun journey. It's been like another craft to learn. So the first 4 years of the business, I just was learning it and figuring it out by myself. And then probably in the last 4 years, I've been more intentional to take courses and learn from people that specialize in that to get some of the nuances and the psychology behind it that maybe I was doing it, didn't understand, or just like get some new ideas. And I'm always trying to improve that. But to me, marketing is such a good thing. It's not a negative thing, because if you've got a great product or even a great free thing, or if you're a nonprofit, you've got a great cause, you have to use marketing to get the word out. That's all marketing is get the word out to the right people to connect them with what your awesome thing is. And so I use marketing to give away my free videos. You know, like you're saying, like if I put out a new video, like tomorrow, I've got a new video coming out and it's going to be awesome. And if someone's on my email list, I want them to watch that video. I don't get paid if they watch that video. I'm not trying to convince them to join my list. They're already on my list. But I just know that it will help them.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't just email it out. I have to be strategic. So every subject line is so important, because I know I'm the same way like you. I'm ADD. I have so much in my inbox. So I have to give people a reason to even open the email, let alone read it or click on something. And so you got to spend time thinking about subject lines of your emails. What would get them to open it? And open it and not be then frustrated like, oh, he tricked me, because that won't help long term, right? That's just clickbait. That's like when you promise something, but that's actually not what's inside.
Right.
And that's a bad idea. It'll work in the short term, but not long term. So I try to think about how to word things in a way that they'll catch their eye and go, oh, that looks cool. Get them to click it open. and then make sure that the text in the email is appealing and relevant. So they're like, oh yeah, this is exactly what the subject line said, and what gets you to want to click on the link. So it's all just a natural flow from their perspective. And that's just to get you to go over and watch the latest free video, because I want to continue to add value to you if you're on my email list every week, sometimes multiple times a week, to just show you that, hey, I'm here. I'm still making free stuff, still trying to serve you. Maybe this video isn't what you're struggling with this week, no problem. But maybe the one next week is. And I want to be that friend, that resource that's always there for you. But that's also how you sell, too, because I have, you know, like my paid courses are an extension of my free stuff. They're more in-depth. They're more complete. They're more like complete systems, like end-to-end. How do you make a record top to bottom? How do you, you know, produce vocals top to bottom? Whatever it is, it's more end-to-end, and it's so good. And I've had so many people go through them, and they get such great results. Like, I want everyone to be able to go through this. Now, I don't know if you have the money to buy it right now or if it's something you're struggling with right now, but it's my job as the brand to let you know about it and let you know why it can help you. And so that's all marketing is trying to position my products in such a way that you see the benefit to you, not the features, but the benefit. What will this actually do for you, and give you every reason to check it out and join? And if it's like, you know what, that looks awesome, but I don't have the money right now, that's fine. That's not my role. That's your role to figure it out. But it's my role to present it to you in a way that you're like, man, I want to save up and get that because that looks awesome. And so marketing for me has just been about, you know, talk to real people in a way that's real to them and gets them excited about what I'm doing so they can at least check it out and have a chance to make a decision.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that's great too, that, you know, top of mind for you also means, you know, being of service and thinking of your customers. Cause I think we get in our bubbles and we're just like, well, say you're an artist and you're like, I really like this song and I really want people to listen to my song. It's like, yeah, but how is this going to benefit the listener? Like, what can you tell them about this song? Like, this song is about, you know, my mom, and, you know, I had a complicated relationship with my mother, and I, you know, maybe you can relate to this, that type of thing, where again, you're like you just said, you're just trying to get the word out and how you can do that, that also serves, your audience. So that's a really great point. Why don't you talk a little bit more about, the evolution of the revolution and how that really started to take off?
Yeah. I mean, The brand was really small and simple, and I was just a little resource. I was able to connect with certain people online and certain brands, and eventually, I remember I did like a post where I mentioned Behringer, which is a brand that, you know, that makes audio equipment, and a lot of times people make fun of this brand because it's really budget and affordable and cheaper, and I actually have some of their stuff, and I think it sounds great, and so I kind of had a snarky post about that why people make fun of it, that they just are brand snobs and they don't realize they can get a good result with it. And I think Behringer saw that post, loved it, obviously, and they reached out to me and said, hey, would you ever want to guest post on our site? You know, their site gets millions of visitors a month because they're a global brand. And so I did some guest blog posts, about 8 of them, I think, on the Behringer site. That got me a lot of eyeballs. It was things like that. I started to connect with other content creators and brands, and Recording Revolution just, I would say in 2011 started to turn the curve, and then 2012 just started to blow up in terms of people sharing the videos, other artists hearing about it and enjoying the videos and sharing it. It was really hard to explain, but it's like that hockey puck, sort of like hockey stick, excuse me, like curve, where it seemed like a slow, flat increase, and then it just shot northward. And it was just more people and more people getting excited that it existed. That just turned into me trying to make more courses that were more helpful, listen to my subscribers and say, they were like, tell me what content to make, what are they struggling with? And that goes back to your point about how did Graham know what video I needed to watch? I mean, so many of those are people have told me what they struggle with and what they need to know. And so it's just listening and knowing these are common issues for people. So let me address them and serve people in that way. And in that, it's allowed me to connect with so many cool people and grow the brand to the point where it became my full-time income. I think in 2 years, by 2 years, I had replaced income-wise what I was making at my previous day job. And that was just from the recording revolution, not even my freelance stuff. So at that point, I knew it was going to be something. And it gave me a lot of flexibility on the freelance side of things to not have to take every client that came my way and only take work with the artists I really wanted to work with. And that's always good. So it really was a sweet, sweet season. And it's been a lot of fun to watch that grow.
That's great. And maybe you can tell our audience what's coming down the pipe and new products and new courses and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, this year there's going to be a new opportunity. Can't really talk about it too much right now, depending on when this goes live. But I'm always trying to foster community, and I have some communities, but there's something new rolling out this year that I think people are really, really going to get a lot out of. That's going to help them not just in music making and making their music sound better, but developing as artists, connecting with people, getting their music heard, focusing on the career side of things, and just being connected with more and more people. So I'm trying to always make the recording revolution more complete by, you know, thinking about, if you're a musician and you're following me and learning this stuff, what else do you need? And so I think something new is coming that I think will help in that area a lot.
That's so great. And why don't you tell people how they can find you?
Yeah, I mean, everything is at recordingrevolution.com. There's a ton of free guides there that are great starting points. I always tell people, like, if you don't even know what gear to buy or what to use, there's a whole series and a whole guide on how to set up a home studio for under $350 and some suggestions there. There's a whole guide on how to record a song from scratch where you can watch me doing it from scratch. One on how to mix a song from scratch. Those are all, like, free, like, mini series that are kind of complete. I would start there, but go over there at recordingrevolution.com or just get on YouTube and Recording Revolution and you'll find me. And I'm also on Twitter and Facebook. And yeah, just look for Recording Rev.
That's so great. I have to say, the other thing that I really like is that the fact that you make it so financially accessible. You know, one of the things that when I first learned Logic Pro, it was like, oh, but now you need to learn about all these third-party plugins. And if you just, you know, if you just spend $300 here and buy this one, this is really cool. And if you, and suddenly you go down this technology wormhole and you're like, it's like $10,000 later, like with all these third-party plugins. And again, I'm a broke musician. Like, that's completely out of my depth. So that's the other thing that I want to share with our listeners that I also really appreciate about your videos so much, is that you basically say, like, look, you don't need to buy all these plugins. Like, this is how you can do it, just with, you know, the built-in EQ and, you know, compression. And I love that. Like, I have to say, like, that just makes me so happy, because again, especially I don't consider myself a tech head, but I just, you know, I started with GarageBand and then graduated to Logic Pro, and I love it. But, you know, there's a limit financially and mentally to what I can do, you know, with technology. So again, I just really appreciate the fact that you make it so accessible and so simple, and that, like you just said, like, you don't need to, you can actually build a home studio for under $300. So it sounds like I'm not alone in that.
No, you're not. And that's the great thing. Like, this is the best time to be a musician in the history of the planet, because not only is it easier to make recordings on your own, it's cheaper than ever. You literally don't need the expensive plugins or the third-party stuff or expensive microphones. And that's what I just don't, that's why I'm on this crusade, because there's people that still think you do need the expensive stuff, and you actually don't at all. So I kind of think it's fun, because you can get a better sound with cheaper stuff than the person using the expensive stuff. So it's kind of like a game of, like, how cheap can I go and make a really good sounding record? And I'm kind of on the crusade to put myself out there and be the guinea pig and show people that it's just a myth that you need to spend money. So I'm not just trying to, like, encourage you that there's ways to do it on the cheap. I'm saying the way to do it is on the cheap, because it's the new norm now, and the gear is so good sounding and so affordable that You're just lucky you were born when you were born, and that you're making music right now. And my goal, I guess, is to remove all excuses for people, the financial excuses and the technical know-how excuses, so that you can get back to doing what you feel like you were born to do, which is make really great music and have fun doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say, I don't know if this has kind of crossed your path at all, or when you talk to your customers and clients and everything, but I'm in LA and I find that there's so many artists and they're like, and I, you know, saved up my money and I gave it to this producer and he produced basically like a really shitty album.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know, I felt intimidated, so I just kind of had to suck it up, or he, especially as a woman, it's like, well, he just mansplained me what
yep.
he was doing,
oh, I can't
you know,
imagine.
And then,
yeah.
so it's like, so I just feel like, and again, I don't know if you're aware of that, but like, that's another reason why your work and Recording Revolution is so important, because you, in effect, tell people like, no, there's no gatekeepers. You don't have to save up on your day job for $3,000 and hand it to some producer just because he's got some names under his belt, and trust him with your baby and let him turn it into whatever he wants, because, you know, you don't know the equipment, you don't know how to mix, et cetera, et cetera. So I just feel like that, and I really, that's why I'm so glad you're on the show as well, to share that it's like, no, you can do this.
That's awesome. And you know what, to that point real quick, scientifically, like, women, you guys are better at engineering than we are. Your hearing is better. And it's proven over and over again. I've worked in a studio where the mastering engineer was a woman, and she was married to the owner of the studio, but she was the only one allowed to master because she just has better hearing than everybody. And it's not just her. It's just women across the board hear better. And so really, you should be able to make a better record yourself than that guy.
Mm-hmm.
That you were working with. So I think I'm glad that it empowers you to do it, because the way you hear music, not just scientifically, but also just creatively, might be totally different, and you want to be able to make the record that you want to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you again, Graham, so much. I am so, so grateful. And I really do want to get the word out about Recording Revolution, because again, it's been such an incredible asset for me and in my music and my producing and Logic Pro. And I just know that I am one of very many. So thank you again.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on today.
Hey, I hope you really enjoyed that interview and got a lot out of it. I couldn't help but think of that Nelson Mandela quote about education and how it really is the most powerful weapon we have to change the world. And I really do believe that's what Recording Revolution can offer you, with all of its knowledge and tutorials about mixing and recording. It sends you, the artist, the musician, the creator, out into the world really informed, really educated about the tools that you're using and the best way you can produce the message, the words, the voice, the song that you want to put out into the world and to change our beautiful little world. So just really grateful to Graham for doing that. And you can check him out again at recordingrevolution.com or his YouTube channel, Recording Revolution. He is also on all the social media platforms, so Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and all that good stuff. And we are musicjobspodcast.com, musicjobswithanspodcast.com. We are also on all the social media platforms, on the Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. And I am your host, L. Ariel, and I can be found at LARIELmusic.com. That's LARIELmusic.com. Have a beautiful, blessed, educational week. And remember to keep on hustling, pursue that dream, and don't you ever give up.